I want to thank Bob Ivins for filling in for me last week. We got in so late, we didn't even get a chance to listen to the message, but I understand it was kind of a group effort. Everybody contributed to it. That's great, and I can't wait to hear it. And some special music by a couple of our outstanding singers here. Couple of other little just updates or notes or whatever. How many people have visited our website just by show of hands so far? Not that many. You need to. How many have a computer and can get on the internet? Okay. If you didn't raise your hands the first time, do you have something you want to say? Do you have something you want to say? Okay. All right. You look like you need to go to the bathroom or something. Yeah. But visit the website. It's your church. It's your website. When Karen and I were gone this past week, we got the chance to share with a couple people. And guess what? We were able to point them to our church, to the website. So that's a great tool that you have. If you want to invite somebody to church, you can say, well, if you want to get an idea of what our church is like, go to this website. So I want you to visit it. I want you to get familiar with it. Be ready to share it. Of course, to share it with people, you have to know the website address. Close. Not quite there. Okay, Walnut Grove Church, then what? NC. NC for Norway. You won't get there without that. You'll go to some other Walnut Grove Church, I think. Won't you, Dave? So, walnutgrovechurchnc.org. We're an organization. So, that's what you got to remember. Memorize that, and then you'll be able to share it with people. It's a great witnessing tool, and Dave has done a great job linking Facebook to it. We have a Facebook page also, and our bulletin, I think, is on it, and all sorts of information about our church, directions here. Everything is there that you need, that a visitor would need to become familiar with our church. So I'm going to keep reminding you of that. I'm going to ask you to raise your hands next week if you've been to the website, and everybody can raise, like Bob, and raise both hands and say you've been there. That'd be great. The little girl from, I know, but I'm thinking of what country. From India, the one from India? Yeah. Yes, Karen asked me to share just one of our servers. We just kind of got to talking, and we got to talking about the Lord, and she was from India, so I just assumed she was Hindu or maybe Muslim or whatever, but no, she was a follower of Christ, and she was very proud of it, excited about it, and she was, by accepting Christ, she got rejected by her family initially, and now they're starting to come around a little bit, too, and so she's kind of instituted a, I don't know if she instituted it, but they have a church service on the cruise ship now for the employees once a week, and I think she kind of spearheaded it, so she's like an on-fire Christian, so she was one of the ones we gave the website to, so she could get a message herself. She kind of leads the services on the ship, so it was just a blessing to her to be able to have a place to go to get more information off. So, did you want to say anything other than that about it?
She had been rejected by the cruise ship.
Oh yes, yeah. She had initially, she was too short. She wanted to work on the cruise ship, and they said, "No, you're too short." And so she prayed about it. You know, God, she needed the job. She needed the money. And they called her up out of the blue and said, you need to go down and reapply. And she says, well, what about my height? And they said, tell them you're 5 foot tall. And she said, but I'm not. She said, tell them you're 5 foot tall. So she said, okay. So she got her job on the cruise ship. So it's just, she just felt like God changed their attitude towards her for some reason and allowed her to get on. So she that's her ministry on the cruise ship. So that's great. Okay, other little announcement. This is important to remember. This year, Christmas falls on a Sunday. I don't know if you realize that, which kind of creates a little bit of a problem because a lot of us have family in, and, you know, Sunday morning is a time of unwrapping presents and, you know, putting the turkey in the oven and all that stuff. So what we thought we'd do this year is we would move our Sunday morning service to Saturday morning. So that gives everybody a chance to, you know, spend Christmas morning, sleep in, whatever. Get up early if you have small children. But to spend Christmas with your family. And we will have the same kind of service on the Saturday morning that we would normally have on the Sunday morning. So we'll be reminding you of that too, so you don't show up here on Sunday morning to lock doors. So we're going to try it. I mean, how often does Christmas fall on Sunday? Not that often. But we thought this was the best way to handle it. So that'll be the 24th. Now, I think I'm ready to get going here. Last week I was here, we talked about Abraham rescuing his nephew Lot. And when he returned from the war, the battle, he was met by two people. He was met by the king of Salem, and he was met by the king of Sodom and the priest of Salem, whose name was Melchizedek. And we talked about how he chose to commune, to have fellowship with the king of Salem, Melchizedek, instead of the worldly offers that the king of Sodom offered him. He wanted the spiritual blessings that Melchizedek offered him. So that's just a review, but that was all in chapter 14 of Genesis. But I kind of left out a couple verses. I read them, but I did not comment, or I kind of skipped over them. And I'm going to go back and get them because these are very important verses, and I didn't want to interrupt the flow of that message. So we're going to go back to Genesis chapter 14, and we're going to look at verses 19 and 20. And that's all we're going to do. We're going to cover these two verses, David, very important verses. Let me read them to you. It says, "And he," that would be Melchizedek, "blessed Abram, saying, 'Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth.'" Remember, Melchizedek represents Jesus in this verse. "And praise be to God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand. Then Abram gave him a tenth of everything." So here we have, in Genesis chapter 14, we have the first mention of tithing and giving in the Bible. And as we have mentioned several times, the first time God brings a new subject about, there's usually something significant he wants to say about it. So we're going to spend a little time on a subject you probably, if you're like me anyway, you don't like to hear preached about, and that's giving. But it is an important part of our Christian life. I know you've heard the guys on TV say, "If you don't give to our ministry, we can't stay on the air. Please send us your money." And the toll-free number floats across the bottom of the screen. And you've gotten your mailers. And you've seen, you've heard radio programs and things where they're begging for money. "Please send us money. If you don't send us money, we're going off the air. We're closing our doors." That kind of thing. To me, it's frustrating to hear those kinds of messages. And I don't typically like to hear messages on giving myself because I believe that many times, not all the time, I don't even know if most of the time, but many times, giving, I believe, is taught incorrectly. And it just doesn't feel right to me the way it comes across. I'm going to try to share with you a different way to teach about giving. Maybe you haven't heard this type of preaching on giving. It's not going to be like what you normally hear, but we here at Walnut Grove, we go through the Bible verse by verse, and we teach on what is in the next verse. And this keeps me as a pastor from preaching on my favorite topics all the time because I go verse by verse. But it also forces me to preach on topics that I don't like to preach on because here they are. And here we are. We're talking about Abraham giving a tenth, a tithe of his blessings to the king. So, why don't we like to hear messages on giving? For two reasons. One, like I said, I think it's incorrectly taught oftentimes. Second reason we don't like to hear giving teachings about giving is we work hard for our money. We don't want to let it go. I'm speaking for myself. I put all this effort to put the money in my pocket. Why would I want to take it out and give it away? It's a natural feeling that we have. So, I'm going to try to give you my views on what I think are biblical viewpoint of giving. First of all, how do we view giving oftentimes? We view it like the little boy in Sunday school class. The teacher was finishing up her lesson on giving, and she said to the boys and girls in her class, do you know where little boys go if they don't put their money in the collection plate? She said to the children. And one boy blurted out, yes, I know. They go to the movies. And with that simple little story, there's a profound message in there. And that is, that's our attitude oftentimes about giving, isn't it? When we give something, we oftentimes think, what else could I do with that money that would bless me, that would benefit me? What movies could I go see? What toys could I buy? What trinkets could I enjoy if I didn't give this money? That's the problem. We do that. I remember one time I was driving to Florida all by myself, and I only got as far as Rutherfordton. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and there was a car in front of me. It was going really slow, and I passed this car. It was a dotted line. It was a legal pass, but while I was up passing this car, before I got back into my lane, the line turned into a double solid. No big deal, right? And there's the little blue light comes up behind me. It says 4 o'clock in the morning. Guy pulls me over, and he said, you passed in a no passing zone. I said, no, I didn't. I said, it was a passing zone when I started. I said, I didn't get back in time, but it was definitely a passing zone. He says, no, if you don't get back in time, you passed in a no passing zone. Now, that's not fair, is it? You're drivers, am I right? Okay. Now, I couldn't talk him out of it. So he gave me the ticket. I forget. I think it was like $125 or something like that. So for the next 600 miles, I'm stewing. I'm steaming. And you know what I thought in my mind? You know what kept going through my mind? What could I do with that $125? Here's what I thought. I'm driving myself. I got a lot of time to think. That would pay for my gas all the way down and all the way back again if that stupid patrolman hadn't given me that ticket. I'd go by a sign. You know, you get hungry. There's a restaurant. I'm thinking, I could buy a T-bone steak in that restaurant. I could have the most expensive thing on that menu and still have money left over from that $125. I spent that $125, I don't know how many times, going down there and back, frustrated, and I thought about what I could have done with that money. Now, I didn't voluntarily give that money, but it's the same concept. We tend to think what we could do with the money if we didn't give it, and that's a problem. Our minds are not programmed right. What we have to do is reprogram our minds so we don't think that way. Instead of thinking about the movies we could see, like the little boy, we need to think about the blessings of giving and how it affects other people. The local church realized that it had never received a donation from the town's most successful lawyer. Here's another lawyer joke. The pastor called the lawyer to persuade him to contribute to the church. Our research shows that out of a yearly income of at least $500,000, you did not give a penny to charity, he said to the lawyer. Wouldn't you love to give back to the community and donate some money to our church? The lawyer mulled this over in his mind for a while, and he said, first of all, did your research also show that my mother is dying after a long illness and has medical bills that are several times her annual income? No, I didn't know that, said the pastor, a bit embarrassed. The lawyer continued, or that my brother is a disabled veteran and he's blind and confined to a wheelchair. Did you know that? The pastor hung his head again and said, no, I'm sorry, I didn't know that. The lawyer kept going. Did you know that my sister's husband died in a tragic accident? His voice rising in indignation. He left my sister penniless with three children. Well, the pastor was totally humiliated at this time. And he said, no, I didn't know all that. I'm sorry. I apologize. The lawyer wouldn't even let him continue his apology. He said to him, sir, if I didn't give any money to them, why should I give any money to your church? Yeah. It wasn't me, okay, Valley? It wasn't me. But you see that idea. He wanted to go to the movies. He wanted to use his money for his fun things. Now let me sum up in just a couple of very short statements what my philosophy on giving is. And I believe this is, like I say, a biblical reference point of view. It's very simple. Number one, God is not broke, and he doesn't need our money. Now, you don't hear that preached very often. You don't see that advertisement in these people who were raising money. They act as if God is has no change in his pockets, and he can't take care of his kids. I believe on just the opposite. God has the cattle on a thousand hills. He has all the resources he needs. He doesn't need our money. Now, I know you're not used to hearing that in church, but it's true. That's the first thing that I want to make. Tithing is not God's way of raising cash. Tithing is God's way of raising kids, of raising us. It's his way of maturing us. I'm not saying, of course, that we don't have good reasons to give. I'm just saying we give sometimes for the wrong reason. We think that God's broke, and he's not. God is looking to us in our efforts to give to change us, to mature us, to get us to look at giving in a different way. And what I'm going to try to do is give you three exciting reasons to give. And none of them, by the way, have anything to do with the needs that we have here at Walnut Grove Church. None of these three things. You guys meet our needs on a regular basis, and I'm so proud to be a part of a church that is not a stingy church. When a need comes up here and we let the need go, the need is always met with abundance, and I appreciate that so much. So understand, I'm not preaching this service or this sermon to try to raise money for Walnut Grove. We're doing just fine. What I'm trying to do is to change some mindsets of some of you so that you're blessed. Okay? So that's where I'm coming from. I'm going to give you what I believe are three exciting reasons to tithe, give your tenth, to give spontaneously when a need comes up, with hilarity, with laughter, with joy, and to give sacrificially, so, to give when you don't always have the money to give. I'm going to give you three exciting reasons to live that kind of a lifestyle. So, that's what we're going to do with the time we have left. I don't know if I'll be able to get through all three of them, but if you're the kind of person that writes down notes, I would encourage you to write down these three reasons. And here's the first one. Tithing and spontaneous giving, sacrificial giving, all this kind of thing, changes your heart. Tithing changes your heart. What did Jesus say? Jesus said it is more blessed to give than to receive. He's saying the person who gives is blessed more than the person who receives. Who enjoys a gift more? The person who receives it or the person that gives it? Well, they both enjoy it. I remember as a young child, when Christmas time came around, boy, did I enjoy Christmas morning, getting all my gifts. It was a wonderful experience. But as I grew older and became a parent and was on the giving end of these gifts on Christmas morning, I honestly think I had even more enjoyment. It was more of a mature enjoyment of giving the gifts than even the joy that I got when I received them as a child. And I'm sure you probably all feel the same way. There is just this wonderful joy about giving. It changes our hearts knowing that the receiver of the gift is being blessed by the gift. I want to tell you a little story about an unusual giving experience I had years ago. I might have even told this story a few years ago, but I know we have a lot of people that haven't heard it. But this story goes back maybe 15 years or so ago. But at the time, my law partner and I had purchased a house right across the street from our law office with the hopes of one day maybe expanding and using this for some kind of a benefit to our law firm. In the meantime, we rented the house out to different people. And my job as the low man on the totem pole was to go over and collect the rent and make sure everything was okay and, you know, fix any leaky faucets and things like that. So I got, you know, the dirty end of the job. And it inevitably, as you often find out with renters, oftentimes it's hard to get the rent from them. And it seemed like every person we put in there was always late, didn't quite have enough money, always had a sad story. And my job was to somehow or another squeeze the rent out of them. And my senior partner would always say, you know, where's the money, where's the rent? Well, they got this problem, that problem, whatever. And he'd say, get back over there and get the rent. So I had the tough man job. Well, we would kick people out after a period of time, and somebody else would go in and have the same problem. And after two or three different tenants, there was one had gotten removed, and a girl came to me, a relatively young girl, a couple of kids, and she needed a place to stay. I kind of felt sorry for her. So I told her what the rent was and asked her if she could handle it, and she thought she could. And she moved in, and after a couple months, like everybody else, she started getting late with the rent. So I had to go over and start talking to her. Her name was Holly. And I had to go over and start talking to Holly and saying, hey, you know, I'm getting pressure from my boss. You got to pay the rent. Well, I lost my job, and I'm trying to find something new, but I'll get caught up and this and that. Okay. So time goes on, and she gets further and further behind in the rent. And finally, my boss says, time to kick her out. You got to go kick her out. So I go over to talk to her and, you know, let her know that how drastic the situation is. And she says, if you can give me one more week, she said, I'll have your money next week. I said, okay, I can do that. And I said, have you got a new job? She says, yeah, I got a new job, and I'm going to be making good money. I'll get caught up on the rent. I said, well, that's great. I'm happy for you. What kind of job have you got? She said, I'm going to be dancing. Well, I was naive. You know, I'm thinking Fred Astaire and, you know, dancing lessons, you know. That's not what she was talking about. As we continued to talk, I realized the kind of dancing she was talking about. It was more like pole dancing. So she tells me this. What? Yeah, well. So she told me that, and I started realizing what was going on. And as she's talking to me, she's got these two sons. One of them's maybe, I don't know, three or four. One of them's maybe six or seven. And one of them kind of, she's standing there in the front door, and one of them kind of sticks his, he's got his arms around her leg, and he sticks his head out on one side. And the other guy's about waist high, and he sticks his head on the other side. So I'm looking at her, and all of a sudden I see these two heads pop up, these two little boys, and she's telling me what she's going to do. I thought, this is not right. I didn't know what to do, but I knew this wasn't right. And I told her, Holly, I said, you can't take that job. She said, it's the only job I can get. I said, Holly, you can't take that job. I said, look at these two little guys here. Do you want them growing up knowing what kind of job their mother does for a living? And we both know what that kind of job leads to. I said, you can't take the job. And she says, well, how am I going to pay the rent? And I said, I don't know, but I'm not worried about it. I would rather you not take the job and me have to deal with you not paying the rent than you take the job and pay the rent and affect their little lives. She said, okay, if you say so. And I said, I'll pray. Let's just see if God can open another door for you. But just tell me you won't take that job. She said, okay, I will not take the job if you don't kick me out. I said, I'm not going to kick you out. I said, okay. So I went back to the partner. Where's the rent? Oh, she needs another week. We're working on it. Okay. Bought a little time with him. Next week comes by. I'm going over to see if she's got a new job, new opportunities, or whatever. I notice her car is all packed up. She's got this old beater car, and I mean every space in that car is tightly packed. The roof has got like 3 feet high of stuff strapped over it and stuff. She's obviously moving out. So she comes out, and she said, well, I didn't get any other job, so I'm moving out. And I said, where are you going to? And she says, well, here's what happened. I called my dad up. Now, her dad lived about 150 miles away. And she said, my dad and I have not gotten along for years and years and years. And he never liked my first husband, who has since left me. And he just refused to see me. He refused to see my children. We just had a strained relationship that whole time. I said, what does your dad do? She said, my dad's a pastor. I said, really? And she said, but this week, she said, I called my dad and I told him what was going on, and I was trying to get him to send me a little bit of money so I could pay the rent. And she said, I told him what you said. That I could not raise my children and live this kind of lifestyle. It would destroy what they thought about me, and it would affect how they would grow up. And she said, my dad, she said, he listened to me. And she said, he said, that guy was right. You can't take that job. He said, but I do have another solution for you. He said, you come home. You bring those children back to me. And she said, I'm happy. I'm excited because I have a place to go and my relationship with my dad has been restored. He wants to see his grandchildren now. She said, I'm so excited. And she said, I want to thank you for, you know, being willing to allow me to stay here basically rent-free. You put my life and my children's life above the rent, and I just appreciate it. And I said, well, you're welcome. I just felt like, you know, that's what I should do, but you're certainly welcome. Then I got to thinking. I mean, she was literally getting ready to drive out the door right there. Drive out the driveway right there. And I thought, she probably doesn't have enough money to get to where she's going. Because she was going to Dunellen, Florida, which coincidentally is the town I was born in, and it's a little tiny small town, and I knew it was like 150 miles away, and I said, Holly, have you got enough gas money to get where you're going, get to Dunellen? And she said, I think I do. And I said, well, that's not good enough. So I thought, I'll give her, I'm thinking $10-$20 would get her up to Dunellen. This was, like I say, 15 years ago. So I reached in my wallet. I said, I'm going to give you some money to get you going down the road. And I opened my wallet up, and I had one bill in my wallet. It was a $50 bill. I didn't want to bless her that much. Okay? And immediately in my mind, I'm thought, what do I do? I can't ask her for change. If she had change, she wouldn't need the money, right? So I just kind of immediately, I just kind of rolled with it. I said, I'm already heading that way. I've already got my wallet open. So I said, here, Holly, I acted like I intended to do this all along. Here's $50. That'll get you plenty of gas to get up there. It'll get you a meal while you're on the road. It'll kind of help you get started when you get there. Her eyes got huge. Wow, she said, $50. I can't believe you're giving me money, and I owe you money. She said, I can't believe this. And I said, I just want to bless you. I want your life to, you know, get started, whatever, get the right way. She couldn't believe it. She accepted it. She said, I can't pay you back. I said, I don't want you to pay me back. This is a gift. This isn't a loan. You just go with God's blessings and head on up the road. Thank you, she said. And off she took, off in that car that was smoking, going down the road. I've never seen Holly since that day. But I did get a letter from her. She sent me a letter maybe, I'm going to say, 4 or 6 months later. Right out of the blue. I totally wasn't expecting it. And it went something like this. Just wanted you to know, I arrived at Dunellen safely. Dad loves my kids. He thinks they're the greatest thing in the world. And she said, we are doing so good. I have a job here, and I've gotten along better with my dad than I ever have in my whole life. And again, she said, if you hadn't got me started down this road, this never would have happened. I would have been right now, I'd be living a much different lifestyle. It was just a thank you note. And I wrote her a letter back expressing, you know, my appreciation for her letter and thanking her, congratulating her, or whatever. And then about, I think it was another 6 months after that, I got another letter from her. And she said, just wanted you to know, I've met a very nice guy who loves my children. My dad approves of him, and he's asked me to marry him. And we're going to live here in Dunellen. And my kids love him. He loves my kids. And I want you to come and be in the wedding or attend the wedding. And as it was, I could not go. I've forgotten what the conflict was. But I wrote her back and said, believe me, I would be there if I could, but I can't. But again, I'm just so excited for you. I'm so happy for you that your life got turned around. Now, as I look back on that series of events some 15 years or so ago, I'm reminded that what Jesus said. He said, where your treasure is, there is your heart also. Now, I took a treasured $50 bill and I placed it in her hands, and with that $50 bill went my heart. My heart went with her and those two little boys, and I hoped and prayed that their lives would be changed as a result of that, that it wouldn't be a disastrous life, but it would be a blessed life. And I can tell you that there is nothing I could have bought with that $50 that would ever give me the joy. To this day, the blessings of where that $50 went. So I tell you that tithing and spontaneous giving changes your heart. That's what I'm talking about. It changed my heart that day. One of these days I may run into her again. I look forward to that possibility, to see what has happened, see how her kids, they would all be grown up by now. But that is just one little story about how spontaneous giving can change your heart. It changed my heart. Now, your heart won't get changed unless you do some spontaneous giving. And not all stories are going to end up as sweet as that story. But I wish I had 10 stories like that to tell you, or 50, or 100. Wouldn't you like to have all sorts of stories to tell like that yourself to other people? Wouldn't that bless your heart as you get near the end of life and you think about what was important? What did I do in my life that was important? It's things like that that will stand out. But you can't get there unless you have some spontaneous giving, some willingness to take a chance on people. So that is the first, what I call, exciting reason to give, because giving changes your heart. Now, I have two other reasons, exciting reasons, I believe, totally different than this one. Good reasons for giving, for tithing, for sacrificial giving and all. This one was a bit emotional. The other two are not emotional at all, but they're just as important. And I'm going to start out with those next time. I just don't have enough time to get into it. So next time we get together, we will look at the second reason, exciting reason for giving. You see how this is not about anything God needs. He's got everything he needs. This is about changing my heart and changing your heart, growing us up, maturing us. That should be the real motivation for giving. Let's pray. Father, I thank you today for opening up again your word and showing us that it is truly more blessed to give than to receive. And Lord, I pray that there are some hearts listening to me right now who are starting to consider not what movie they can go to, not what toy, not what trinket they can buy, but how they can impact the world with their giving. And I just pray, Lord, that you would start opening our eyes to the many opportunities that we have that are exciting opportunities to give and to be a blessing to others. So I just pray this week you would even start changing our hearts, changing our minds about this, and allowing us to take part on this great adventure of giving. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.